Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
And on that bombshell...
Let's do it.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, a podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. And we're back in the rugby dungeon again to talk about week one of the European Cup rugby for 2017-18. I'm Tim, JB. Hello.
Hello, Timothy.
Hello, Phil.
Hello, Timothy.
Phil is wearing, and if you're on Facebook Live, you'll see this. If you're not on Facebook Live and you listen to the podcast, just go to our Facebook page, like it, share the video. You'll see a very, very bright England training vest. Was that from the Sam Burgess era?
I think this is post-Burgess era, to be honest. Post-Burgess. I think this is more recent.
I've got something which is very much Burgess era as well. I've got a England Rugby World Cup 2015 jersey, which I've worn tonight.
Very nice.
In solidarity with Big Stu, which is something we will get onto in a little bit. There you go. I'm gonna strip off for this one.
Strip one Canterbury top off for another.
Exactly. And we will be talking about the European Cup and European Challenge Cup. We'll be talking about the European Champions Cup.
We've got to talk about the most successful team in European competition ever. Toulouse.
Krasnoyarsk, maybe. We'll talk about them, but I don't think we need to talk about anything else in the Challenge Cup. We also want to let you know about what is lining up to be an incredible tour that we want you to come and join us on. But first, let me remind you, we are at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. We're on Facebook, Egg Chasers Podcast. We're on Instagram. Anyway, you find us. You're listening to the podcast probably on Acast or on iTunes or somewhere else. Hit subscribe, leave us a review, and thank you very much. How much of the rugby did you see, Phil? JB?
Quite a lot.
Yeah. I went to an actual game on Friday night. I saw all three games today. I saw the Harlequins game, the end of it, which is bloody brilliant, the end of the Harlequins game. I love Marcus Smith now. I think I actually love him. And what else did I see? I saw something else as well somewhere in between all that. It's kind of merged into one big mass of rugby.
Yeah.
One rugby orgy.
Yeah. I was going to say like rugby soup. Like,
similar.
Orgy and soup. Soup orgies.
We needed to make it a bit more continental than that. It's a bisque.
Rugby
bisque.
Well done.
Bisque. Yeah. I don't know. All right. Let me start with this one. What's kind of your highlight of the weekend, Phil? What was your favourite moment?
So right up until the last game, I was convinced that Leinster had put in the most complete performance of any team this weekend. That was until 5:30 on Sunday when Saracens played.
Yep.
Wow.
My highlight is the same as Phil's. It's Saracens through and through. They felt incredible.
I also thought that Racing looked really good. They didn't score as many points as they should have done, but bearing in mind how much trouble they've been in, and let's talk about the other Paris team. Well, there was talk about the merger not so long ago.
It was allegedly a done deal until it was not a done deal.
Stade Francais lost in Siberia, which is an amazing result for Krasnoyarsk in the Challenge Cup. In the Champions Cup, Racing were abject. They were awful last year, except for a couple of... They turned it on a couple of times, but I thought it was a really positive performance that should give them a lot of hope.
I think their first half performance was exceptional. Their second half performance was hit and miss. And I do think it was mentioned in commentary a few times, particularly Ben Cate made this point. They rely so heavily on the brilliance of Vakatawa, who was playing 13, and Leone Nakarawa,
his
second row. But is one of the best ball handlers in the world.
I used to criticise Glasgow for this, and subsequently I've been proved wrong, actually. But I used to say, like, Glasgow's strategy is basically put two Fijians on the field and see what happens.
Yeah.
maybe a little bit premature, that analysis. But you're right, he gives you so much go forward. His offloading is incredible.
I love that Ronan O'Gara said that he's a nightmare to have in the squad because he makes all the other players think that they can play like that as well.
Yeah. you can see it. Yeah. You can see that the other players trying those offloads and they just don't have the skills.
Yeah.
But also, so the support lines that players have to run supporting him is completely different to any other player because he's so big and so strong and powerful. He stays on his feet for the extra few yards and gets the offload. Whereas if that was a normal player, you need to be right up his arse to get to clear out.
Yeah, so this is like the menace of talent, isn't it? And I go on about this all the time. Like, Faf de Klerk is a good example. How do you train to be so unique? Or a Quade Cooper?
Yeah.
I mean, how do you think, right, what we're going to do is we're going to go through three phases, you know, fling it wide, and then Quade is going to do something at some time, presumably.
It's like those kind of equations. Input, question mark, brilliant output. Exactly. And you just can't work out what that question mark's going to be on any given day.
I think there's a sort of arrogance of I've got a good coaching story as well, actually. There's a sort of arrogance of coaches. Because, I mean, obviously, they think they've got a huge input, and they do. But when you've got a guy like a Quade Cooper, say, or anyone who is extremely talented, it almost takes away from the system and the coaching that you're doing. So I don't think they actually like him that much.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting to see. So, obviously, Racing playing at home against a good Leicester Tigers side, but not a Leicester Tigers side that is up there with the likes of probably the two best performances.
I thought it was a really spirited performance from Leicester to stay within 4 points.
It was a great performance, but I don't consider them as good as either Saracens or Leinster or even Exeter or probably even Glasgow for that matter. So when Racing come up a team who are seriously more organised, can match them up front and defensively very, very parsimonious, it'll be very difficult for Racing to handle.
So you had the same highlight. See, it was one of those, because I was doing a lot of travelling, I missed quite a bit of the rugby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've seen a couple of live games. Yes. In Exeter and Belfast.
I would say the atmosphere at both of those, they're such great rugby clubs. I really love Ulster. Really love that ground. It's got terraces all round the lower tier. Well, it's kind of not even an upper tier and a lower tier. The stands aren't really big enough for that, but it has. Much like the Welford Road stand with the terraces. Can't remember which one. Is it Crumbly, that one called? No, that's
not
a different one.
Don't know, mate.
Anyway, whichever Welford one, the one where the players walk out of, Ulster have around four sides.
Yeah.
And the really close to the ground. The atmosphere is absolutely brilliant. So that was one of my highlights. Although it was spoiled. I'm going to chuck a negative one in straight away.
Uh-oh.
Making teams walk out together. Don't like it. Cup finals, yes. Not for a regular game.
Do you know what? It's funny you should mention that, because I don't really have a view on teams walking out together. I don't really care either way, truth be told. But I do like how they play the music over it when they walk out.
I love the music.
Yeah, I think it makes a sense of occasion.
No, the music's fantastic.
And so the music is used by Sky and BT Sport. Yeah. So the music is, it is Champions Cup.
Have it for me.
Not sure I can do that. You need
go on, Tim.
Get it on your soundboard.
I can't remember it now. I was just thinking of the Champions League music.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm thinking of. Why don't they just use it for all continental sports?
The game Friday night. Let's briefly talk about that.
Sale.
Well, no, hold on. Where do you stand on this? Because like we can influence people. We can make this happen. I think this needs to change. I think I know.
But I like it.
I know that you're not. No, I love the music. I don't like the players walking out together.
How do you do it without? Because I guess it's for the cameras, isn't it? The music comes on, the teams come on.
Know why they do it, because they don't do it for every game, because some grounds don't allow it. So, well, some grounds you can't, like Welford Road, for example. It doesn't. The tunnel's not big enough. You just can't do it. So they don't. So it's not like they make it happen for every occasion. I think they've just looked at football and thought, they do that. That works. So let's do that. And actually, I just don't see the point. What I love the theatre of the polite clap for the opposing team, followed by the massive cheer. Roar and cheer for the home team. It's part of the theatre of it.
I've never even thought of it, mate. But I'm wondering if it's worth spending our political capital on.
I want it changed.
That's what I'm thinking.
If you're listening, change it.
Right, change it. There you are. It's official.
For cup finals, game
cup
on.
Cup finals, yeah. Because cup finals, it should be neutral venue.
Or any neutral venue game.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know what? I can't. Right, you're convincing me the opposite now. Because I think, particularly the early European pool games, where you've got two titans meeting up, it is quite a grand cup final atmosphere, which is why you get all these great atmospheres. Because it is that. It is like the pinnacle of a team's achievement to be playing Champions Cup.
So Tim says get rid of it. JB says keep it.
Yeah,
I say...
I'd say keep it, but add pyrotechnics.
All right, but the music's great. And my other highlight was, did you see James Haskell at the bottom of a ruck kicking... Like, you know how rugby league players do, they still do
do they still do that thing
where they hump the ground?
Yeah, yeah. The vibration.
Yeah, there's, and you always think that they're having a stroke or they're someone.
Someone will have made a gif of James Haskell at the bottom of a ruck kicking like, imagine a child stuck under something and desperately trying to wriggle free. And that's what it looked like. That was my another highlight. But we can get into the actual talk about the actual rugby. Yes, that. It wasn't a great game at Ravenhill. Sorry, the Kingspan.
Not the best. Not the best conditions. Few handling errors throughout the game.
Just a few. But...
Now, I've not seen this game. So you can answer me a question.
Yeah.
Is my analysis of Wasps correct, which is they have basically no attacking threat?
Pretty much. Yeah. It's... When you actually look at their side, you go, Willy LaRue is not Kirtley Beale.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the thing that's become most apparent in the last few weeks.
Yeah.
So last season when they had Kirtley Beale, when everyone's fit, Kirtley Beale plays 15. When if you were resting Gopith or Sippers or one of them picked up a knock, you immediately moved Kirtley Beale into 12.
Yep.
And you maintain those two ball players, 10 and 12. Kirtley Beale is the guy they're really missing, because it's Kirtley Beale and Gopith, Kirtley Beale and Sippers makes a great ball playing 10-12 partnership.
Well, I mean, it looks like they're missing them both. And they have nothing to fall back on.
And Willy LaRue has not been playing like he would.
And he's a very small man. I mean, people forget how small he is.
Yeah, but he struggled taking high balls and.
Yeah,
I'm not sure. Hopefully he'll come into it, but I agree that that's. I'm not saying that's he's the cause of Wasps. They've got other issues.
Yeah, like their defence is pretty. Lackluster.
It was better on Friday, much better.
I mean, I guess the thing is, when you score 30 or 40 points a game, like Wasps were capable of doing previously, and then you can't score any, and your defence is weak, all of a sudden you find yourself a bad team very, very quickly.
So we spoke about the bad. The couple of
good, who would you like to talk about?
Well, the couple of good bits just from that game. Stockdale and
Stockers
and Piatow were both brilliant.
Yeah. Mm.
They were both instrumental in the two tries, Stockdale's own try and the McCloskey try, where it was all Piatow and Stockdale. Without those two, the game would have been pretty drab.
He's a giant man as well, 6'5".
Is he that big?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a big boy.
He's a big boy.
And he's quick as well.
Are Ulster good enough to do something in this year's Champions Cup?
I think they'll do well to get out of the pool. I think, but no. So I would say no, I don't think they have that ability to go deep into the competition. I mean,
so they've not got a bad group though.
No, they've got a good decent pool.
So Quinns and La Rochelle,
they're beatable though.
Certainly,
very much.
Certainly, Ulster, three wins at home. It's got to be three wins at home,
yeah.
And then you're looking to pick up two bonus points.
Two could come out of this pool,
and or. One win away, which is doable.
Yeah.
Cause particularly if they play, Quinns is the December games, the back-to-back. Is it back-to-back December games?
If they get La Rochelle already out late in the late rounds, then they're the sort of team that
will just give up.
I tell you what, La Rochelle, just switching to the other side of that group, I thought they looked very good against Harlequins. They absolutely bullied them. And I'm not sure if this is an indictment of Harlequins. I feel Harlequins have got a really weak underbelly. Like, they're easily pushed around. They played very, very well at the end of the game. But they just seem... They're just inconsistent. I don't know what's wrong with them.
It's very Quinsy.
It is very Quinsy.
I know I mentioned at the start of the show, I love Marcus Smith. I can't believe he is 17, 18, whatever he is. 18. I simply can't believe it.
Take it easy, because this is, and again, you were accusing me last week of like.
Mate, if his career ends tomorrow, he's still been absolutely amazing.
No, stop it. Stop it.
No, he has. He's 17.
Stop it, because all I'm going to say is Danny Cipriani. Everyone said exactly the same thing.
Well, there's a one closer to home if we're talking about Harlequin's La Rochelle.
Go on.
Look at his opposite number.
Yeah.
Ryan Lamb.
Yeah. Mercurial.
Mercurial youngster. Look at this young lad, Ryan Lamb. Look at this young lad, Shane Geraghty. What unbelievable talent.
I don't care what anyone says. If his career finishes tomorrow, it's still an amazing achievement.
Don't get me wrong.
A 17-year-old. We're not talking
about 18. Stop saying 17.
He's
18.
Because you accused me last week of saying I'm talking down England's incredible prospects. I'm not. I'm just saying there's a big difference between a massively promising 18-year-old and an Owen Farrell world-class fly half.
Oh, completely. Completely. I never said that he was Owen Farrell. I'm just amazed that an 18-year-old can guide a Premiership team or a European team round the field. And it's not like he's just an incredible winger or a flanker where, you know, the job is a little bit more simple. You just concentrate on your job. It's guiding the entire team. And I think previously in podcasts we've said the one position I think could get older in general is fly half. Because you don't need to be that physical and can kick, you know, you've seen everything. Experience counts. And that's the incredible part, is that you're so mature at such a young age.
Yeah, it's a really promising start.
I am with you, Tim. I think he is doing brilliantly, but
I'm not saying he's the finished article.
We've just named a few there who have looked brilliant at 18, and by 23, 24, you're like, where's this guy's career gone?
Mm. Yeah, well, you know. If he matures into Danny Cipriani, well, you know, shame on him. But he'll be a good player.
he'll still play a decent trade, make a decent living. It's probably not a bad life being Danny Cipriani.
Yeah, I'm buying shares in Nesquik right now.
There was another game on Friday night, and I'll just talk about it quickly.
Challenge Cup. We've got standards.
Toulouse?
No, hold on. We're not talking about Sale Toulouse before we talk about...
I'm going to talk about...
No, you're not talking about Sale Toulouse before we talk about Champions Cup games.
No, I'm going to be very, 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 very quick.
Right. One point.
2 points. Right? Oh. First, it was quite interesting because Sir Alex Ferguson showed up at the age of...
Yes, okay, that's fine.
That is quite interesting.
Second of all... Steve Diamond, I think, openly hates me now. It's hard to describe exactly how much he hates me.
I've had a couple of Diamond death stares before.
He doesn't look at me. He looks at the floor. He doesn't even look at me. It's bizarre.
What did you do?
I've got no idea. This is
the sort of stuff I'm totally game on to talk about. Let's get into this, right. Let's stop down for a good 20 on this. Get the kettle on.
Yeah, so, I always ask the questions in like the little press conference-y bit, just because I know he has to answer them, right? So that's good. And one of the questions I asked this week was, what does this team need in order to progress to the, you know, to next level, to turn these draws into a win? And he goes, well, we spend 5 million on our squad, they spend 30 million on theirs, so 25 million, please, which is actually what he thinks he needs to. Get 3 more points or 1 more point?
Yeah, 1 more point to get 2 more league points.
I was thinking this. I mean, could Toulouse actually, could any of the French teams really be spending 30 million on a squad?
Of course not. That's 30 million on their annual. That's probably the total outlay of the entire operation.
Yeah, it's probably turnover.
Turnover or something like that. I don't know.
Because they've got the 10.
Oh, yeah, it's running costs that they don't want, isn't it?
Well, no, they have the playing squad, which I think is 10 million. But then you get the player endorsement deals, which are not counted to that. In the Premiership, they're counted within it.
Yeah, it's like 600K per player or something.
No, I'm not buying
this. I'm not buying it.
There's a lot of players, looking at this Toulouse team, there's a lot of players not worth anywhere near 600K.
I know. So like, there's quite a lot of guys playing for Toulouse I've never really heard of. Yeah. And I'll tell you another team of players I've never really heard of. I watched Cast. Was it Cast? Or?
Cast versus Munster.
Well, actually, on that one, so talk, what? Because this is one of the games I didn't catch. What happened at the end of this game? Because I've seen loads of people ranting about this or raving or whatever. Just some people accusing Matthew Carley, the referee, of having bottled it. What happened, Phil?
So, end of the game, scores a level. Cast in a promising position. scrum half picks the ball up from the back of a ruck, and I think it was Robin Copeland slapped the ball down from his hands, and I think most people would say that should be a penalty, but
deliberate knock on.
It wasn't given. Or so there's a few ways you could do it, because Copeland was bound into the ruck, and I would say he wasn't on his feet in that he wasn't supporting his body weight with just his feet. He was leaning on the player in front of him. So he's part of the ruck, can't play the ball. He's off his feet, can't play the ball, and he slaps it out of the nine's hands. So it looked to me like it...
Oh, I'm just looking at the video of it now.
Probably should be
a
penalty.
Have you seen it, Jay?
No, I haven't.
So he's bound onto a ruck, so he should be out of the game, and he's off his feet. He's also he's reached over, probably from an offside position in the first place.
Oh. Yeah, coming
reached
from the side,
over, possibly. Most of the time, if you mess about with a scrum half when they're in the act of just picking up the ball, you get penalised. And that looks like what he's done. I hadn't seen this before. So there he goes.
Idiot.
He's lying on top of the ruck.
Yeah, you can't do that.
You can't
that
do that.
Is, that's something you can't do. So that should be a penalty.
But was the TMO involved?
Don't know.
No.
So I was going to play a game today, which is read out the cast squad from one, and then wait until someone guessed which team this was. And you bring in like 1986 France, turn of the century Toulouse. I literally didn't know any of them until I got to Rory Cockett, is it?
Cockett, yeah, Cockett. Number nine.
Yeah.
Rory Cockett.
And that was about it.
How much stick would Robin Copeland have got if that had been given a pen?
And they lose the game on that.
And they lose the game on that.
Yeah.
Who was the other team in this group?
So this was in...
Oh, speaking of Robin Copeland, this is Robin Copeland. Right, so he might not have good discipline around ruck time, but he's got a good pair of pipes on him.
Better than Ben Foden?
Yeah.
I love Ben Foden. The more I think about it, the more I love his lack of self-awareness.
Well, all right, well, very briefly, not going into it, where do you stand on Ben Foden getting dumped by Owen Farrell?
I thought it was a yellow card.
Oh.
No, I didn't think it should be a yellow card. I thought it was going to be a yellow card. And then I thought when he elbowed Tamana Harrison in the face, that would be a yellow card.
He didn't elbow Tamana Harrison in the face.
A bit of a push with the kind of forearm.
Yeah, we need to be... This is one of the things...
No,
I'm not going to go into this again.
Please
but
don't.
No, I'm not going to. But this is one of the things. We need to be really careful with the way that we describe things. Because if he elbowed Tamana Harrison
in the face...
No, wait. You said... I thought he'd get a yellow card when he elbowed Tamana Harrison in the face.
When he put his elbow in his face.
You didn't say when he put his elbow.
You did say
What does putting your elbow in someone's face mean?
Well, it means your elbow, as in, you know, your anatomical elbow hits someone's anatomical face. Look, I don't want it to be a yellow
card. They're massive men who make contact with each other, incidentally sometimes. It was a big tackle on Ben Foden. Nothing was given. Love it. The boys play.
Great tackle.
He was past the horizontal, and that's why I thought he'd get into trouble.
So this comes back to my definition. He lands flat on his back. Yep. His legs go up in the air. In my view, the way you can interpret the laws is he's not taken past the horizontal. Perfect tackle. I thought Farrell was in control the whole time. I thought it was a great hit. Let the boys play.
Yeah, love it. Love it.
Good. Ooh, that can't be right.
What?
I'll tell you later. I actually didn't think it was legal, but you know, it is what it is.
Back to the group. Yes. So it is Castro, Munster, and then they're joined by the other two members of Munster's group last year, Racing and Leicester. So it's three of the group from last year.
Do you know what? That's an interesting point you make, because I've been thinking about this, and I actually don't think they should be allowed to put same teams in the same groups. I know it's done by seeding. It should be seeding, and then you couldn't have, so, like, Clermont,
Clermont in Saracens.
Saracens seems to be one all the time. Leicester versus... Leicester, Munster...
And Racing.
I mean, they should be separated, really.
And Saracens, the champions of Europe. Clermont, the champions of France. Clermont weren't first French seeds because La Rochelle topped their... the table after the regular season, so La Rochelle got...
I love the rivalries that it throws up. I know what you're saying, but I quite like the fact that... Because you play them so infrequently, it's quite nice to actually have kind of a bit of year-to-year niggle every now and again, like a three-year run where two teams play each other. It's quite nice.
Yeah,
I guess so. I mean, I don't mind it so much when they get to the final stages, because that's a real rivalry then, isn't it? Like, you know... Munster, Glasgow of late, Clermont, Saracens of late. They're pretty good. But in the group games, I think, you know, if you're a Leicester Tigers fan, do you want to go to the same grounds again?
Yeah, because you normally owe them one from last year.
Yeah, that's true. But you get to play them twice anyway.
It's like Leicester would have loved to play Glasgow after that game against Welford Road, because it's the easiest team talk in the world. There's no easier way of getting your players fired up for a game like that.
And Scotstoun's a great place to go.
Just on that note then, do you think the Northampton players are going to be fired up about having to play Saracens two more times?
What happened to them? Ooh. Do you know what? They should have just sent Courtney Laws out on his own.
Fair play. Do you know what, though?
Someone on Twitter described Courtney Laws as a diamond in a puddle of shit.
I disagree with that. I think the credit's got to go to Saracens rather than the criticism on to Northampton, because although they got a bit of a hiding... They actually put in a fairly big shift.
What, I mean, the physical Northampton.
The physicality wasn't lacking. That's for sure.
Yeah, but it's just
they rolled over a bit too easy for some of those tries, though.
They did.
When Saracens broke the line, like the Owen Farrell try, start of the second half. Saracens break the line. There's one Northampton player to be seen, and half a dozen Saracens players following through.
Yeah.
They've just rolled over there.
Mako was immense. I love it every time.
They are immense, aren't they?
Mako Vanapola has a massive 5 minutes, which, like, he does some incredible carries or an offload and a break or a big couple of scrums. And then he always seems to have a contact lens that needs to be put in again.
I've also noticed another thing which has started to bug me, how dull coaches are now. Like, you have a row of three behind a laptop sipping water, and they're always sipping water. You know, yellow card, sip of water, try, sip of water. That's all... It's incredibly dull.
Like snooker, they drink water now. Do you remember when you used to watch on telly and they'd have a beer on the go or a gin and tonic?
Yeah.
They'd be smoking
I never actually remember this, but I do remember, like, there was a comedy sketch, wasn't there, with, I can't remember, Mitchell and Webb.
Mitchell and Webb, it was, it was Mitchell and Webb.
Mitchell and Webb.
But it was based on there was an old show, Smith and Jones did one way back in the day.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, a classic one where they're like, it was a couple of darts players and they were always going for it. Ooh, a double vodka and Coke.
The coaches, when they cut to them, apart from Michael Chica, apart from him, you can't tell just by looking at the coach whether his team has scored a try, conceded a red card, knocked on over the line, or what. Because it's always the kind of Mark McCall particularly.
Yeah, Mark McCall tightens the cap on his water.
But Eddie Jones as well, Steve Hansen, Malinder today.
Yeah,
you cannot tell what's happening. It could just be stock footage from another time.
Yeah,
in
Malinder
the game.
Could actually be reading his bank statements.
Yeah, his team are 50 points down. Deadpan face.
Exactly. But I love
his
that
son
about,
scores a 50-yard try.
Yeah.
Deadpan face.
But that's Dai Young, like that. You never see him happy or sad. Did you see? He held his tongue on Friday. So I asked him after the game, you know, 13 penalties conceded and a yellow card, you got on the wrong side of the referee, and he kind of laughed and intimated that he thought they really got hard done by the decision. So there's a few teams actually this weekend, and one of the features of it is the battles for sometimes a losing bonus point or a try bonus point.
Yes. Yeah, like Harlequins.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I don't know, what was the Harlequins today? Scarlets. So they played that was such a weird
game.
That
was a great game, actually. I really enjoyed that.
So you wanted to talk... Actually, we'll do that instead. Rather than talk about this game,
I'll tell you what,
more generally.
As we've got a poll, hold that thought. Make sure you remember what it is.
Okay,
all right? Because I just want to remind people that Cornerstone helped make this podcast possible.
Oh, they certainly do.
You can get yourself an amazing shave. And if you're a new listener to Egg Chasers, you might not have heard us talking about this. If you've listened for a while, you hear us talk about it a lot. But if you've never taken us up on our offer, can I just suggest you do? For the cost of £4 and absolutely zero obligation, you will thank us for it, because Cornerstone are amazing. There's other mail order razor companies that have come on trying to copy what Cornerstone did. They're the original. They're the best, like we are. the original rugby podcast.
And if you don't believe
us
on that, have a look at our Procter & Gamble cease and desist letter.
True. Yeah. We got a, what is it, 314-page letter from Procter & Gamble.
Something
Wait, wait, careful. If it wasn't exactly 314 pages, they'll be on again.
Oh, yeah,
exactly,
they will.
Exactly. So,
it was a number of pages.
A specific number of pages.
It was a specific number of pages to be confirmed. And if that doesn't tell you, when a pharmaceutical cosmetic giant is concerned about Cornerstone, you should be concerned about Cornerstone. And what you can do is, because you listen to us, you get a £10 discount on your first order. You also get a free engraved aluminium shaft. Get your initials on there so the missus knows it's yours when she's nicking it and using it, because they won't stop anyway. And get yourself six razors, your free aluminium shaft in a Cornerstone presentation box. cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers. cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers or
Procter & Gamble at checkout. No, sorry, Egg 10. Egg 10 at checkout.
JB, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, Phil brought up a really interesting point before the podcast began about the French teams versus everyone else and how they play. And nothing really summed it up like this Toulon game. So what was the point that you were going to make?
The point was, so the four best French teams, in my mind, that is Montpellier, Racing, Clermont, Toulon. Apologies to La Rochelle for not including them in that.
Yeah.
But those four, they all kind of have similar attributes, which is they have at least one player who is precociously talented. In those four teams, it's the best player, most talented player in each of them is a Fijian player in Nakarawa, Nodolo, Tuisova and Alavaretti Raka.
Who you warned us about.
Who scored a hell of a try in the opening
Phil told us about him the other week.
Against Ospreys. So they have those incredible players and then they have a massive pack and it feels like not much else in terms of organisation and coordination. Compared to the British and Irish players, British and Irish teams, the best four, best five of whom are Saracens and Exeter, Scarlets, Glasgow and Leinster, and they have incredible coordination, discipline, organisation. Now, that doesn't mean they all play the same way, because Glasgow and Scarlets in particular play a lot of ball, but the way they can do that is not because of the truly exceptional talent, which they do have very talented players, but it's more because of the foundations,
yes,
which is built on organisation, discipline, hard work, teamwork, and they come out to be more than the sum of their parts, whereas I actually think the French teams come out to be less than the sum of their parts, but because they are paying more money, the sum of their parts is the kind of initial part of the equation is arguably greater.
Yeah, I completely agree with this. So if you think about Toulon over the last, say, 4 years, the thing they've done as well, if not better than everyone else, is be massive. I mean, they've just got massive, massive men.
Yeah.
And you kind of see this. There's a kind of a tedious link here. But you kind of see this if you ever watch like A-League rugby. Like, the bigger boys don't do particularly well because it's all about, you know, speed, quickness, just raw, athletic. Well, it's more about pace than power. I think as you get more organised and more structured, like, the size really starts to stack up, which is why French teams play with such massive packs and they value that over everything else. It's the easiest way to win a game, just getting over the game line continually.
French teams play like it's under-12s rugby.
Yeah, just one-out rugby. And then someone's got a really talented player. Yeah, actually, it's perfect.
That is a great analogy. And then when you get the handful of the giants like Montpellier had, but they came against such a well-organised pack and team in Leinster, it becomes too much for them.
You've got to worry, though, haven't you, when a Vern Cotter gets hold of a Montpellier. Eventually, they're going to turn that corner.
Yeah.
Eventually, they're going to turn the corner and become, you know, a Northern European-style team, but with French money. And that's terrifying. French money and then Southern Hemisphere stars. Good God.
Yes. Yeah.
Let's take a brief detour from European competition and talk about the reason why Phil and I are both wearing England stash tonight.
Oh yeah, let's do that.
So we're both wearing the rose tonight in solidarity with Big Stu.
Yep.
After he got hauled over the coals, that's not the right word. He just got dragged through the mud by Rob Andrew.
Yeah.
Serialising and just trying to flog his book. I don't know anyone that's come out and gone, good on you, Rob. Well done.
Finally, a breath of fresh air.
Yeah. Someone telling it like it is.
I wanted to hear more about the Burgess affair.
What is wrong with the man? I'm going to be careful here because I think it's very easy to get carried away with the Rob Andrew hate because he is presumably widely hated. Looking at Twitter and looking at everything which everyone has said in the media, there's been nothing positive said about Rob Andrew, and it hasn't been for years. Having said that, I don't really know why people are so negative, although this book might have something to do with it.
So I'll tell you why I'm a bit negative about this. So there's basically, the way I've read it, Rob Andrew is making two points in this. This is a Telegraph article that came out on Monday, I think it was. But it is a Telegraph article that is just a direct extract from his book. So his two points are Lancaster wasn't good enough, got it wrong, mainly around the Sam Burgess, but he made fundamental errors. That's point number one.
Quite often in organisations when, you know, Rob Andrews shouldn't be worried about talking about that. He should be worried about who the boss was that employed him.
Well, and that nicely brings me on to point number two,
which,
despite Rob Andrew being one of the most senior men in the RFU from 2006 to 2016 and being fundamental in the appointment of Stuart Lancaster, Rob Andrew has tried to absolve himself of all responsibility for anything that Stuart Lancaster has done in this.
I mean, why? Because I don't understand why he needs to go and absolve himself of all responsibility. Yes, the World Cup was a disaster. But subsequent to that, Eddie Jones has actually inherited quite a good bunch of players. They've lost one game since he started. English rugby's in a great position. Well, it just seems a bit unnecessary.
Yeah, no, I agree. But I suppose if you try, we're looking at that from our point of view. If you try and think of the mentality of it, someone who is wired to be unbelievably competitive, to back themselves against anybody else, and that's the type of character that you're working with, that's the type of bloke Rob Andrew was. So it is obviously not something he can just let go away, or he feels an absolute need that his version of what happened needs to be out there.
That's an excellent point, actually, that he is obviously quite a competitive guy.
Yeah.
On the other hand, though,
it just doesn't feel like a very rugby way to do things.
No, more to the point, it doesn't seem like a very good way to do things if you're a senior individual. I mean, what did Rob Andrew actually do at the RFU? I'm looking at his Wikipedia now. I have no idea. I know he's very senior, but I don't know exactly what he did.
Was he equivalent of the DOR kind of thing?
Yeah. Andrew's position was described as director of elite rugby.
He held director of elite rugby and director of operations positions at the RFU.
So he might have signed off on Sam Burgess coming over.
And he reportedly took several attempts to inconclusively describe his responsibilities. That's on Wikipedia.
Inconclusively described. As long as the role's as vague as possible, you can never get pinned down and accused of not doing anything.
There was a weird interview with him where he's trying to explain he does two jobs, not one job. Because he's so busy when people were trying to question, you know, exactly what he does there. And he was there for a long time, was he not?
From what I've got, 2006 to 2016.
See, I love rugby because when you start to get to know some of the guys in the game, you realise it's actually full of really good people.
Yeah.
And then you kind of meet some of the Welsh fans or the Irish fans, they say, you know, the English are arrogant. I think, no, they're not. I know most of them. Or I've met a lot of them, I should say. But then a character like Rob Andrew comes out of the woodwork, who's been at the head of English rugby for God knows how long. I think, actually, maybe they do have a point. You know, maybe there is something in this English arrogance thing. Because he does strike me as the kind of individual, like the figurehead that every Celtic nation would hate.
Yeah.
Well, equally, then people might say, and it's not quite the same role and the same thing, but people might will be rolling their eyes when they saw that headline just after our podcast. We were joking about it last week. And then, what do you know, Monday or Tuesday, Wales to review Gatland's Law.
No, get out of here.
Exactly. So there'll be similar kind of eye rolls. Like, oh, God. Whenever anyone goes, oh, yeah, there's, you know, people might level the accusation that Wales are just pragmatic. They pretend they have principles, but they'll shift. They'll have those principles until there's other ones that they prefer to have.
Yeah,
which I don't actually have a major problem with the Gatland's Law changing.
You know, I don't have a problem with it. I think it was shoddy to start with. I think it was the union trying to depress players' wages for the benefit of the regions, and I don't like that approach.
I like to think of it more as a positive move. It was an attempt to retain, just simply to retain players in Wales to keep the domestic game
more
of a spectacle.
We'll always have Welsh players in Wales. And my point has always been opportunities is as important as talent. So if you really want to ruin the English game, flood every club with Welsh players. You know, at one point last year, I think there's like five tens who were Welsh wearing English jerseys. That's better for the Welsh game than having, you know, those five tens back, only four of which could start, and the other eight tens who'd be involved in match day not playing.
The RFU have got a carrot rather than a stick, so they incentivise teams to select English qualified players.
I think that's a good point, which is the RFU version of this is actually quite positive. I mean, yeah, there is the, you know, the banning or the exiling of players who go abroad, but generally speaking, they're well paid and well looked after, and the, you know, the English clubs have got a lot of money. It's a negativity of the Welsh approach to say, yeah, you just can't come back and play.
Yeah.
And they're in Bath or Bristol.
So the change is now, basically, it's going to be the addendum to the Gatland's Law is going to be however many caps Reece Webb has when he leaves Ospreys, it'll be,
yeah,
that's the number of caps you need to have.
precisely 57 caps.
Yeah, 57 caps, and your name must rhyme with Heb.
Yeah. Not a cap less, unless another talented player with fewer caps leaves.
Yeah, I don't think Webb's got anything to work. Maybe he does, because they went a long time without him. They like Gareth Davis.
But as soon as he was back fit, he was starting, wasn't he, Webb?
Yeah.
I actually agree.
He is very good.
The profile of that kind of player, bigger Webb, 29 or 30 in biggest cases, I think that's the perfect age for someone to go double your money elsewhere.
Absolutely.
And let Sam Davies have the Ospreys 10 shirt.
Correct. Yeah, yeah.
That's the way to do it. Yeah. I like it. So I imagine Finn Russell will be off at the end of the season from Glasgow, and that's probably a similar kind of thing as well.
Maybe in a couple of years' time.
Maybe after the World Cup.
World Cup, yeah. You've got to tie it into World Cup cycles in my mind.
I actually don't think the best move for Finn Russell would be to leave, because Glasgow is such a superb organisation. Going to France, you know, you could see someone like Finn Russell declining rapidly.
But I think a few years' time, this World Cup, maybe, because Finn Russell's relatively young, maybe even the following World Cup, and then get 4 years of, I don't know, 400-500k salary.
Yeah, that's not bad.
See, I wonder with Finn Russell, maybe he's actually the kind of character, because he's got that mercurial quality, maybe he actually needs to be tested. And maybe he's too good for that.
No.
That's not disrespectful to Glasgow, you know what I mean?
It's sort of like, do you know who it'll be like? It'll be like a worse version of Johnny Sexton. So Johnny Sexton is, he is the key to Leinster. Goes over to France, doesn't enjoy it, comes back, re-establishes himself. He was lucky, I feel, that Leinster wanted him back and that he could still do that. I would worry for Finn Russell if he left Glasgow and they got someone else in, that he wouldn't be the player he was.
Mm. You know about how, again, talking carrot and stick about trying to get players to stay put in their own country. You know Ireland's method.
Let them not pay tax.
Well, no, you get. It's not that you don't pay tax. It's that they take your ten. If you play in Ireland for 10 years, they average your best 10 years earnings.
Yeah.
As a professional, and you get the average of that in one lump sum.
Is that right? It's something to do with tax as well, isn't it?
So if you have all six or seven,
is it a rebate or something?
Yeah, it's a rebate. So you effectively get your best, or it might be 6 years. I can't remember what it is. Let's say it's 5 years for argument's sake, for purpose of this. You're Johnny Sexton, and your best 5 years earning whilst under IRFU control was $500,000. It means you will get a one lump sum at the end of your career, or the end of 10 years or whatever, as of $500,000. So
that's quite a good incentive.
It's nice, a pretty decent incentive. There's a lot of players, if you're an Irish international, you've been there a few years, you're not going anywhere.
No, you're not owing. And it must be devastating when the central contract's released and you're like, you know, was it Donica Ryan that got released?
Oh, I'm not sure.
One of the Munster guys didn't get his contract renewed.
Mm.
That must be pretty devastating.
Yeah.
Especially with that nice juicy bonus at the end of your career.
Might as well just go to France.
If anyone knows anything about this, get in contact. Yeah. I'd actually like to know what really happens.
Yeah, I don't know the total flesh on the bones. I know the general principle of it. So, yeah.
Just one last thing on the Rob Andrew piece.
Go on. Yes, please.
Before we go back onto perhaps some of the games and look forward to next
Maybe
week
we
as well.
And before we go back to talking about an incredible tour which is coming.
Oh, yes.
Which we want you to be at, so don't miss that.
The final point on the Rob Andrew piece is I think most of his criticism about Stuart Lancaster is actually spot on. Oh, as in, most of it were kind of points that I feel that we made, if you go and listen back to shows 2 years ago when England crashed out of the World Cup,
yeah,
around the quandary of Sam Burgess and the selection dilemmas that that caused, and Stuart Lancaster trying to fill a Manu-shaped hole with a Sam Burgess-shaped peg.
Yeah.
And also some of his limitations in selection and the work he was doing, and his strengths, which are not necessarily selection, but are his building of the youth team and all that stuff. Rob Andrew is probably spot on all of that. It's the way that he's gone about it and the way he's stuck the knife in over there but absolved himself of the blame over here. That,
yeah.
By saying, yeah, but basically, so, yeah, don't worry about who signed Stuart Lancaster. Don't worry about who gave him and the coaches a six-year contract. Don't worry about who was ultimately overseeing the whole thing when Sam Burgess came across. I almost got Wayne Smith.
I know, that's so weird.
I think that's probably the more nasty part of it, which is he was second choice. You know, we always wanted someone else.
Well, of course, well, that's fine. I don't think that was even a secret. But going, oh, well, I almost got Wayne Smith, and look what Wayne Smith did. He won the World Cup with Graham Henry and the All Blacks.
Won the World Cup. Yeah, fair play to the guy.
If your auntie had nuts to be your uncle, etc. It's like, what? It's kind of irrelevant. And just you throwing, yeah, I agree with you. It didn't show a lot of class for me.
No, it didn't.
It is hard to... It's easy to forget, though, because we're 2 years removed from the World Cup or whatever we are, exactly what a monumental mess it was.
Yeah.
And also, the Burgess thing, looking back at it, is so bizarre. It is so bizarre. He couldn't play 12 for Bath. In fact, he played 13 for Bath.
He did play 13 more for Bath.
And he probably had more appearances at six.
Six, yeah, yeah.
I mean, just imagine taking a standard Premiership six and putting them at 12. I mean, that's what we're talking about. But this guy had never actually played Union before. Before he came to Bath, it's so bizarre.
We loved the roller coaster of it as it was happening.
The
I loved
headlines
it.
And the
actual, slow motion.
Remember the first game he played. I think it was Harlequins at the Rec.
Yeah,
and he came on with like 15 minutes to go, and it was like all eyes were on this moment. And it was there was a couple of carries, a couple of tackles.
Yeah, I loved it. It was a lovely ruck there by Burgess.
great rucking.
Burgess there, the dummy jump in the line out.
The dummy line. He's used more as a decoy than anything else. Okay. I should tell you something.
It was a great story.
Yeah, never has a substitute who didn't really do anything been spoke about more.
And made more money.
Yes, very true.
I'd love to get Sam Burgess pay for the amount of work that he did on a rugby field. It is a shame, though, that maybe one of the UK's best rugby talents across both codes is going to be remembered for like a 9-month stint of nothingness.
Well, he's got an opportunity. So he will very, very shortly be playing his third World Cup in 4 years.
Yeah, of course.
World Cup every 2 years, yeah. Just on that cycle. Not that I think the England Rugby League squad will do much at all against the Aussies and the Kiwis, but he's got a chance to kind of put right some of those wrongs.
Come on, Cowhead.
With one of their best players, Hardacre, being banned for drugs.
Oh, did we speak about this?
No, we didn't.
Do you want to speak about it?
No. So this was...
Not really.
So, Zach Hardacre, because it's quite interesting. I've actually had... gave someone a call who knows about these things, right?
I'm going to be honest, I don't even know what happened.
Yeah, so Zach Hardacre, probably one of the better players in Castlefield. No, Castleford.
Former Leeds fullback, England fullback. Talented, but by most accounts, troubled individual.
Yeah.
He's had a few issues, which is, I believe, is why he left Leeds, why he's now playing at Cass, but they seem to have got the best out of him. Was banned, so he didn't play in the final.
Nope.
When Castlefield got beaten by Leeds, Castleford, the best team in the league.
For anyone who doesn't know, Castlefield is a very small area in Manchester with a few bars,
yeah, a few offices. Bars, a lot of apartments,
yes,
a few trendy apartments.
Yeah, so he tested positive for cocaine after the Leeds game. So I think he played against Leeds.
I don't think he did play in the final.
No, he definitely didn't play in the final.
Yeah.
So there was a test at post game, and he failed for cocaine.
Yeah,
and so he's likely to be banned for 2 years. So there's a couple of interesting things here.
Let's see what Let's see what Mick Morgan had to say. Thanks, Mick.
Cheers, Mick.
Castleford. Commentator.
God, Castleford.
Yeah, so I hate this. I absolutely hate it because there's a good chance he's going to be banned for two years of his career, which is about 30% of the average career. And for a rugby league guy, you don't earn much anyway. Now, I know people are going to say, oh, we shouldn't have done it. Oh, we knew the laws and so on and so forth, perched on Mark Pius. I just don't think it's right banning people for recreational drugs. Now, the argument is that it could be a performance enhancer if you did it before the game. But I would suggest if you're doing cocaine before the game, you've probably got a problem rather than, you know, you're looking for performance enhancement.
Also, like, football players don't get tested for that sort of thing, do they?
No, and rugby league does. They get tested under UCAD rather than internally. They do get tested internally, so I found this out. So UCAD are the body that do it. They don't do rugby union, but you basically just have to go with whatever they say. Now, rugby league, it would seem, do acknowledge that they have a problem with recreational drugs because they also do separate recreational drug testing to put these lads into a programme. I just don't see... Yeah, look, it's bad for the individual. It isn't behaviour that I necessarily want to encourage. But I just don't think it's worth banning someone for 2 years of their career, particularly when the other part of every bloody sports ground now is mental health awareness. I can't think of a worse scenario for a guy with a problem to be in than having a problem with substances anyway, then getting banned, then not being able to pay your mortgage, and and meanwhile everyone's wearing bloody pin badges for mental health.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, I see what you're saying. As in, a bad life choice, perhaps, but not one that you need to go to that drastic kind of a measure. Actually, as you say, if you want to talk about being a compassionate kind of
that's it
sport, then
it seems to be a completely
don't wash your hands of someone.
Yeah, and that's exactly what they're going to do. Now, you know, it might be with him, it might be, you know, loads of other things as well, but it makes me very uncomfortable that these Puritans at the top of some
would he be able to play rugby union?
Well, I did raise this prospect.
Is it not under like a WADA, WADA, WADA banning?
Yeah, I think the answer is yes, he could. But it's like a gentleman's agreement that they wouldn't do it.
Maybe this is how rugby league players will exit their contracts little bit without any legal fees. Like Denny Solomona, if he just...
well, that's kind of...
No, I'm obviously joking.
I've got to say, I would lie if I didn't think maybe Sale could do with some more back three cover. I mean, on the cheap as well. I mean, you know, every cloud has a silver lining. And maybe, you know, a very, very cheap contract going his way would be enough to entice him over.
Well, we will see.
Incredibly controversial if anyone does go for him, though, in union.
We'll get back onto the Champions Cup and whatnot, and then also look ahead to weekend two. I love these European double weekends.
Yeah.
They're so exciting.
They're great, aren't they?
They're really great. But talking of Europe, we're going to have another foray into Europe as the Egg Chasers podcast that we want you to come along to. So our Tier 2 tour, which proved so successful in Bucharest, Romania in March of this year, we basically talked about going on a bit of a road trip. The way it started was we wanted to go to England Island in Dublin and we couldn't get any tickets for love nor money. So we thought, right.
I didn't want to go to that game, did I?
We did. It was because we were talking about, well, me and Phil did.
I definitely wanted to go to that.
We couldn't get tickets and we looked at what other games were on and we spotted Georgia, Romania. Had such a good time in Bucharest. 100-odd people came out. It turned into a live show and a massive booze up watching Six Nations rugby. And a bit of a city break, coffee with the boys.
Lots of coffee with the boys.
Yeah.
And all of that. So we're gonna do it again, bigger and better, and it is shaping up to be amazing. Thanks so much to everyone who's responded already.
Yeah.
Expressing interest. Already, loads of people saying they've booked flights already to Madrid, which is where we're going.
Already, okay, we have surpassed, well surpassed the numbers of Bucharest.
It's going to be big.
I've just got to be careful now. This is like going to consume my life now for the next 6 months. We just it's kind of, where is this going to end? So I think there are some developments. We might have an Egg Chasers Invitational rugby team playing a Barbarians game on the Friday. We might, in which case we'll have what is known as the third half out in Madrid. And then a day of rugby, and then the last day will be the podcast.
Day of rugby being watching Six Nations.
Yeah. And then the last day will be the podcast, followed by the
Spain
actual game itself.
Germany.
Spain-Germany. Now, there's also a chance we might be joined by some interesting individuals, to put it mildly, and World Rugby are helping us substantially, should we say. So yeah. We can't announce anything. If you want to see what this substantial help may be, there's only one way to do it.
So last year, because so many people came out, so again, thank you for that, World Rugby heard about what was happening, came along, documented it, put it out on their World Rugby TV show, and so they want to help us make it, because they're as interested in supporting Tier 2 rugby and letting people know how great it is, and the fact there's this fantastic competition and all these rugby-loving cities around the world and around Europe that we can go and enjoy. So just because you can't get your... Just because you don't know someone who has a debenture at Twickenham who can give you their £120 ticket, there's some top rugby and a lot of good fun to be had. So it is the weekend of the 10th and 11th of March.
Yep.
The game's on the 11th.
Games are on Sunday. So the Spain v Germany is Sunday the 11th. Yep. Saturday the 10th will be spent watching Six Nations and enjoying the wonderful refreshments that Madrid has to offer in the sunshine.
I honestly don't know. After going to the Bucharest game, I honestly don't know why people actually go to Six Nations games now. I mean, yes, they're good. But, like, you can actually get closer. The towns are cool. I mean, Madrid is so much better than Twickenham. So much better. it's just awesome. And the other thing that I want as well is if you are a very good rugby player, I only want good players, right? I intend to win. And you fancy a game for the Egg Chasers Invitational, let me know.
Otherwise, come on down and we'll, so anyway, so let me just, so to run it down, so my suggestion would be, and lots of people have booked their flights already, my suggestion would be Thursday night to Monday, if you can manage it. Coming on Friday and just taking Friday off work, that'd be doable as well.
Yeah.
That'd be perfectly awesome, and maybe get an early flight back on Monday. But I think last time I was looking, you can get return flights to Madrid from all over the UK and Ireland for as little as £60 return.
Yeah, they're nothing.
So even if you're I'm not 100% sure if I think I can do that, get the tickets, get the flights booked, Airbnb with some mates, it'll be nice and cheap. And there'll be loads of other rugby fans out there. We'll fill a bar watching Six Nations. It'll be an amazing atmosphere. Sunshine, beer, rugby.
Yeah. And also, just think about it like this. This could be your last chance to go to Madrid to watch a rugby game before Brexit. And then everyone's banned.
Yeah.
So you should do it now.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. That's a very good point.
Obviously, England-France will be cancelled next year.
You can email us, contacteggchasers@gmail.com, if you have any questions or thoughts or anything you want to bring up or suggestions. You can find us on our Facebook page. We've set up a little page. You can ask us questions, chat to other people. Just gather some e-mates together. Let's go on a Six Nations tour. And it's I'm so excited. It's shaping up to be amazing.
It's going to be very, very good.
Yeah.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Next week's games.
Yeah, there's a couple of teams probably we haven't mentioned that maybe we should
have. I don't
think
we actually spoke about Scarlets enough. I think Scarlets are worth an honourable mention because, yes, they lost. They kind of figured out Toulon for large periods of the game.
Particularly that second half.
Oh, God, they did exactly what they needed to. But then, conversely, Toulon did exactly what they needed to. As soon as so it's kind of like Toulon came out strong, Scarlets figured out what to do, and then Toulon figured out how to beat how to get back ahead.
Yeah, just back over the line. It was a brilliant game. This is probably one of my other favourite games of the weekend. And I was... So that first half, I was really disappointed in the Scots because they didn't perform to how I know they can perform.
Yeah.
But that first 10 minutes of the second half where they scored the two tries, McNichol and Halfpenny, they looked sensational.
I tell you what,
they were playing all the rugby into Talon's half as well.
So I think the problem they had in the first half was they were getting dominated at the game line. Like every French carry was 5-6 yards.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you get an offload in and all of a sudden you're struggling. And for them to go forward, they rely on high quality ruck ball and they couldn't get their ruck going. And, and also their forward carriers weren't getting over the line to create good wrecking circumstances anyway. So it sort of just all combined. But when it opened up, they looked all right.
Do you think missing Cubby Boy and Barkley?
Well, it can't be good, can it? Because Barkley's like your leader.
And both those are so good at slowing down the opposition ball and securing you quick ball.
I think maybe one of the best takeaways that Scarlets get from this is how much talent they had at their disposal to bring on.
Yeah.
So Gareth Davis didn't start, Ken Owens didn't start. Someone else, Hadley Parks was on the bench.
Yeah.
So it's been a while since any Welsh team could actually look to their bench to shore things up.
To strengthen things, if anything. Yeah.
So that's very, very promising. The return of this game will be mid-December in Parky Scarlets.
Oh, no, it'll be after that, won't it? It'll be January.
January.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how well Toulon will fare in nice, cold Llanelli.
After a very festive Christmas period for the Toulon boys.
Oh, yeah.
They'll be spending some serious money on the...
serious cheese money.
Serious cheese and red wine money.
I would love to know what their cheese bill is. I mean, like the Saracen's food bill for going to America was 80K.
That's probably a post-game Toulon cheese bill.
Yeah, at least.
Right, we've had some people getting in touch on Twitter.
Okay.
Anyone important? Anyone
yep,
big?
Yep, yep. Yallop or Yax, Valo Magullis, they've got their name down as.
Cool.
Said, awful European kits, discuss. Did you see Ospreys kit?
Horrific.
Horrific. Yeah, horrific. Absolutely awful. Exeter. The pink. Oh,
Exeter. I love so much about Exeter. I do not like that kit.
So you've always got to go back to, does the kit represent the team?
No.
And the answer is...
Well,
for Ospreys, it actually does. I mean, I kind of...
Horrendous
you,
taste.
Yeah, wouldn't you just be disappointed if the Ospreys came out in like a really nicely done kit? So actually, no, A-plus for the Ospreys, because that's what it should look disgusting. Exeter have got a similar problem. Every European kit they wear is, generally speaking, horrific. They've got a proud tradition, and they'd be cowards if they went away from that now.
Didn't really talk about Exeter as well. It's one thing to know what Exeter are going to do. They're really good at getting themselves into your 22 and then picking and going and driving them all in.
It's amazing, isn't
it? It's one thing to know it's coming. It's near impossible to stop.
It's an art form. So I asked someone, one of the lads I was interviewing, I was like, do you prep this up? I know that sounds like a stupid question.
Relentlessly.
But they must do. And what are the details that they look for? I mean, are they looking to attack like the third man outside? What are they doing? Because it's so effective. And you're right, they must do that so often to get it so good.
Rob Baxter, generous as ever with his thoughts and time on the TV, if you watched it after the game, he said, yeah, well, we like to make it simple. Rather than giving them six options of what to do, we know we're going to do that. When we kick to the corner, we know what we're going to do. We're going to try and drive it. And then if it breaks down, we're going to pick and go until we score. So he rather than practice six different things, they spend six times as long practicing just that.
Nice.
And that's why they're so good at it. Yeah.
Well, they say in jiu-jitsu, like, it's best to have one good move than lots of bad moves. Practice what you're good at.
Glasgow will be, were, I'm sure, very frustrated by that.
Yeah. Sounds like it's teeing up nicely for a good return leg, that one.
Yep.
Yes.
Oh, God, yeah. So, what else? I like this question.
Anyone been on contact on Facebook Live of notes?
I've just turned off that for a second. Did Mark McCall actually smile on camera tonight? Or was this because his team put in a near perfect performance?
Wind.
Or did he have a bit of wind?
Wind. You haven't spoken about that.
I like to think that Mark McCall just watched a small child like fall down the the stand, trip up and fall four flights of stairs down the stand.
He's got one of those video montages of people popping footballs that kids are playing with and drowning kittens.
Kian Prendergast said, Leinster, bonus point win over mega rich Montpellier, starting only players produced by their academy, bar Nasewa, who went off after 20 minutes. Is that right?
Maybe.
It was the whole squad, apart from Nasewa, the whole side, apart from Nasewa, was...
I'd love to go through them.
Homegrown products.
I can tell you in 2 seconds.
I know Joey Carberry is looking pretty tidy at
Carberry,
fullback.
15.
Oh, no, Robbie Henshaw, you can't claim him as your own product.
Yeah. Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. He looked really good, though.
Most of the rest appear to be.
Yeah.
Do you know, we haven't spoken about Saracens. I mean, we've said that we love them, but we haven't actually spoke about the game.
I don't think we need to.
No? All right, good. Do you want to do next week's games, then?
Oh, hold on. Very briefly, I'm just going to chuck some other games at you just for a brief comment.
Sell to lose.
Benetton actually looked really good. 27-0 did not reflect how well they played.
Yeah, so there's a bit of chat about on Twitter about Bath not securing the bonus point and it's not good enough, that kind of thing. But I don't know, I didn't see it.
So from what I've seen the highlights, Benetton almost scored 2 or 3 tries. Bath had some courageous defence to stop them.
Bath were bullied up front.
Bath are missing... the list is 18 first-team players.
Yeah, you can make a pretty good team out of their players not available.
Yes. Mm. But Benetton are improving. So Benetton are not just whipping boys from the Pro 14 at the moment.
And I found out a little bit more information on that because we were saying, is it the Conor O'Shea effect? Well, basically, yes, because he has changed the strength and conditioning of the way it works in Italy. And... so yes, that seems to be having a short-term effect. They're much, much fitter and able to stick with teams for longer. They used to be good for 50 minutes and then...
they are legitimately good, from what I understand, at scrimmaging and lineouts, which I know sounds like a cliche.
Benetton had 12 internationals, Italian internationals in their team.
Did they?
Yeah, 6 in the pack, I think. And
It would be nice to be able to sit here and talk.
It might even be the whole pack was Italian internationals.
It would be nice if we can get to a stage where we can sit here and talk respectfully and knowledgeably about Italian rugby because it's actually good.
Yeah, I mean, we actually want to watch it.
Yeah, that's a kind of the dream, isn't it? But we're still not quite there. Maybe a few more results in the Pro 12.
Maybe 14. A couple more years.
Well, you know, look, they've been doing it for bloody 15 years or something now. It's about time.
But now the kind of foundations are there, aren't they?
Mm.
Once the foundations are there, it will come.
I hope so.
I've got a quick question.
Yep.
On Twitter, Ben Sweeney asks, should anyone who booed or thinks Faz deserved red be publicly hung, or is a mere life ban from the sport sufficient?
I don't think they've got to be mutually exclusive. That's my first thing.
So the ban and the hanging?
Yes, exactly.
You can ban them.
The banning is a principle.
Yeah, exactly.
The hanging is the actual punishment.
Yeah, you mean you've got to stand for something, haven't you? So that would be my first thought. And also, you could award the ban posthumously.
Yeah.
Can you?
Yeah, you could do.
Yeah. So if anyone thinks of scattering ashes on Welford Road or wherever it is, no, not a chance.
So you postpone the cremation or the burial. Have their corpse taken?
Oh, are we letting them have a normal burial? Are we not just like, are we actually letting?
It
them...
should be like, I mean, not to make light of the people that went missing in dictatorial regimes, but they should just go missing, like no explanation, no nothing. They just go,
and they wake up in a Siberian gulag.
Yeah, yeah. Where did Dave go? Well, he booed Farrell on the weekend, and then don't know, just went. No explanation, no nothing, no notes.
I guess he's cracking rocks in Siberia for the rest of his life.
Yeah. So, I'm sure there were people that booed, and I don't like it. But on the flip side, and again, trying to stay positive, the deathly silence...
is worse.
...at Kingspan. No, but we talked about this before. If it's a club, like, if it's a French club...
If it's a booing club, it's okay.
Where everyone boos and shouts and cheers, and that's kind of... it's always been like that. Don't have such a problem. But the way that some in Europe this weekend, some of the silences... for kickers was observed.
Exactly.
Just
if that's your
beautiful thing,
do it. If your thing is clapping and hooting, do that. I actually quite like the different atmospheres and the different grounds.
The booing at Toulon for Halfpenny, obviously,
was
incredible.
I mean, I don't suppose you remember when Toulon must actually hate Halfpenny because they tried to put him off with Star Wars music once.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
That was against Scarlets, wasn't it?
Was that?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. Fair play.
Did he get that kick?
No, I don't think. It was just before half time, wasn't it?
He missed a couple today.
Yeah. Some of his kicking was excellent, though.
Shall we now do next week's matches?
Yes.
Finally.
Apologies if we missed anything.
Right.
Do you want to pick a match quietly to yourself now for pick of the week?
Yeah, we'll do it. The end. Is Bledisloe 3 this weekend?
Is it?
Is it?
Oh, it might be. Yeah, because they've got 3 games, haven't they?
Yeah.
I'm not watching that.
Or is it the weekend after? I don't know.
Yeah, it has to be.
International's 21st. No, this coming weekend, Australia versus New Zealand.
Is that in Hong Kong or something like that?
10 a.m.
Or Tokyo or it's somewhere like that.
Do you know what?
Suncorp, which is...
Oh, is it?
I think that's Brisbane.
Should I say... I don't think they should go ahead.
No, I think it is Brisbane.
If it's 1-1, do the third match ready to go. This is such a waste of time. I mean, I feel for the Australians.
Well, if they make the same improvement between the first and the second game as they do between the second and the third game...
Well, they'd be world champions.
They would be winning this, yeah.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that happening.
I quite like Australia and New Zealand having a 3-game series.
I don't. It's too much.
Yeah, maybe every year. It's money, though, isn't it?
I don't even like Wales, England. Do you know that stupid game they did in May?
Oh, yeah, before the World Cup.
No, before the tours.
Oh, no, yeah.
Yeah, straight after the final. None of the best players.
Why is this occurring? I don't like it.
Well, it's money, isn't it? But Gus Pichot has come out and said about... Because the Samoa have asked the RFU for £160,000 of the £10 million.
No, not having it.
As a cut.
No, absolutely not. So Samoa get plenty of money and they waste it. It is completely corrupt.
But you could say this. Well, there have been rumours about the way that Italian rugby is structured and...
I don't know any facts there.
I'm only saying what.
Samoan rugby is widely known to be corrupt. If you ask anyone about where the money goes in Samoan rugby, people just shrug their shoulders and say, "Oh, I'm not sure." And then when they come over for the World Cup, the Blazers will be travelling in bloody business, and all the players.
Well, what about if the Samoans are going to be getting for that England game? Each player will get £95.
Yeah. Well. Don't waste your money on business class fights for all of your committee and the extended committee's family.
Okay.
I mean, that's what I would say. And it's no good coming cap in hand back to the RFU saying, hey, will you look after us? Because our home nation is so abjectly miserable.
So what I'm saying is they're getting £95. So they're getting £95. The England players that they line up against will be getting, and Phil could work that out what this is but as a factor, but they'll be getting £22,000.
Well, so the answer is...
They'll be getting £22,000. So if... it could be given in a brown envelope to every one of the Samoan players, so you knew that they were getting it. The principle you'd be up for, though, right? That if
do you know what I'm
that,
up
that
for?
Game will generate that, for... that game will generate £10 million, yeah. Of which Samoa are saying, "How about 160k?
No,
revenue share." And Gus Pichot is saying that it's all wrong. The numbers are all wrong. We need to think about some kind of revenue share.
All right,
but New Zealand have said no. Australia have said no.
And I would say no too. I would say that there is enough money in Samoa rugby just from what World Rugby give them. To get them paid, right? So Ben Ryan, who is a smart man, actively wants to separate the sevens from the home union, and that's for a good reason in Fiji. Samoa do something relatively similar. If I was a Samoan player, I simply wouldn't play. I don't think it's on. I wouldn't play, and therefore no one gets any money. I wouldn't play for 95 quid. No chance. I don't think lads in Sedgley Park could play for 95 quid.
Probably a lot wouldn't.
Yeah, so they've got to go on. I think the Samoan rugby players themselves have got to. And I'm no fan of unions, but they've got to band together and say this is unacceptable and not play until their union sort it out.
So there you go. At Newbury, a win, and I basically got paid. I got paid a little bit more than Samoan international players get paid.
Yeah, but you're a little bit better as well, aren't you?
Comparable. Oh yeah. Similar, yeah.
So the short. The long answer to your short question is no. They should not get this money. Do you know what the RFU should do? And this is a serious thing. We always do things like send over coaches there or give lads experience of rugby over here. And you know, there is a lot of help with coaching and experience and that sort of thing. The RFU should actually lend Samoa, Fiji, whoever it is, administrators. Who know how to administrate a union properly. And if they're serious about reforming, they can do. But I suspect that they're not, and they quite like embezzling the cash that they already have. Hope that's not too litigious.
Okay. Games this weekend then. So we've got Bledisloe 3. New Zealand 3-0. Good.
Yes.
Yeah, perfect.
So, Friday night. I'm only going to go through the Champions Cup games here. Friday night.
And to fans of clubs in Challenge Cup, be better. Not the fans. anyway, you know what I mean.
Sale at Lyon?
The one game worth mentioning is the Thursday night game, which I did watch. It's a dreadful first half, Gloucester versus Pau.
Pow.
But quite a good second half. Mm-hmm. So the Thursday night Challenge Cup game is Gloucester again against Agen.
Oh, crikey. Gloucester have not got it easy, have they?
No. So, Friday night, what will be a very good game, Scarlets against Bath.
Mm. Ooh. Scarlets.
If Bath don't get half of their team back, I think this could be a bit of a hiding.
Yeah,
Bath.
I think Bath could really come unstuck here. Yeah, Scarlets. Yeah.
Then, so that's in Pool 5. Also in Pool 5, on Saturday at 3:15, is Benetton hosting Toulon.
Right, okay.
Give me Toulon.
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 Then, Pool 2 on the Saturday. Two fixtures. Clermont hosts Northampton, which will probably all but see Northampton exit from the competition, if not mathematically, but
yeah.
I think this will be a bit of a hide-in as well. Yeah. Another hide-in. And then Saracens host Ospreys.
Were much improved.
Yeah,
they kind of butchered their own. What was the chat? Was it Watkin? Butchered a chance towards the end.
I don't know. I was watching the other game, but a surprisingly close score. I was really expecting it to be.
Astonishingly close, considering that Clermont scored two very early, relatively easy tries.
Mm. When you look at the team for Ospreys, it kind of makes a lot of sense. And they got a lot of their senior guys back.
Yeah,
that's a really good team on paper.
It's okay.
Yeah, it's not a lot of international experience.
Yeah.
So,
it's okay.
But Saracens are going to win that.
Oh, yeah.
Then in Pool 4 on the Saturday, we have Leicester hosting Cast, which should be a Leicester win.
Yep.
And interestingly, Munster hosting Racing.
Munster.
Big Munster at home.
Yeah, I'd say.
I think Munster. But it's just the magic that Racing can bring, particularly Leone Nakarawa and Virimi Vakatawa. I'm deliberately missing one of the games from Saturday.
Okay.
And then on Sunday, we have Pool 3. We have Montpellier hosting Exeter, which I think will be a very interesting game.
Oh, that's very interesting.
I think Montpellier at home.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't put it past Exeter to... Well, I certainly hope Exeter are going to get one or two bonus points out of this game.
I was going to say,
The target.
That would be the target if I was Exeter. Yes. Well, no, obviously they'll be targeting a win.
Yeah, they will be targeting... Because I think...
Of course they will be, but you know what I mean? It's actually... To come away with a losing bonus point from there would be a decent result.
Do you think
result?
They're going to struggle because of the way that they... I mean, the way they play just doesn't lend itself particularly well to European rugby, particularly against big French packs. I think they might come unstuck, actually.
But again, it comes down to the organisation, and one thing that Exeter pack has certainly more than any French pack is fitness.
Yes.
So they that pick and go in, and that organisation will be as good in the 79th minute as it will in the first minute.
So I actually think Exeter will be scoring. If they do score, will be scoring relatively far out. When they're quite open with what they do, they're as expansive as anyone. It's only that narrow bit when they kind of close down.
Kick for the corner, in the 22.
Their defensive wall is oppressive. But it's going to be tested.
That'll be a great game.
Yeah, I think Montpellier can get over the gain line.
Well, they can sort of find a weak shoulder with a bit of footwork. They've got those kind of characters, haven't they? So, yeah.
Sam Simmons has to be the starting England 8, right?
What?
For the autumns.
Well, I'm not sure starting.
Oh, no, because Hughes is back.
I'd like to see him in the squad, as in
if you,
the 30-man squad.
Well, if Hughes is out, who do you really go for? Can't go for Carl Ferns, out for 9 months.
Yeah, a fit Carl Ferns, he would have been absolutely gutted that he hadn't come back to England, I think.
Yep.
Well, I think you're right.
Probably right, yeah.
So
who else is there? Clifford was been used an eight before?
No, he's not an eight.
Well, I think this is where I think a guy like Don Armand has earned a call up because he plays across the back row. He's been playing really well for a couple of years.
Mate, there is no way Don Armand gets the England eight shirt.
No, not in England. I'm not saying you would have him. I'm not saying you would go, you are my number eight.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't. If you were going to chuck someone on the bench.
I mean, not even Exeter think
if, that. If Nathan Hughes went down, then yes, I'm saying maybe Sam Simmons jumped straight into an eight shirt. But what I'm saying is, if it's someone to come into the England squad instead of Clifford.
Instead of Clifford,
then,
I see what you mean.
Then Wilson or Armand.
I
like Wilson, I like Armand. I think for the eight, though.
If Simmons has a big game away in Montpellier, then we're in business. This is let's just remember he has started the game brilliantly and so on merit.
He's got six tries. Ooh, fascinating stat. Mario Itoje, most penalised player in the Premiership.
Oh, really?
Yeah. No one talks about he's got Matt Kvesic-esque statistics.
Wow.
If Matt Kvesic was to
start. What, this season?
Yeah.
This season.
Wow. Nine, I think.
Yeah,
penalty machine, Maro Itoje.
Who'd have thought that?
This weekend's a test because it's going to be test intensity against a brilliant team in a cauldron in Montpellier. If Sam Simmons shows up big, then fair enough, I'll go with it. But I like the way Eddie Jones does it. He doesn't just switch his opinion on a couple of big performances. He wants to see something much more long term, and I think that's the right way to go.
Okay, we'll see that.
This will be a big test because one thing that Simmons is not as a number eight is a massive heavy traffic runner.
No, he's not.
No.
Not at all. He's probably the fastest and probably the most explosive back row player in the Premiership.
Yeah.
In fact, he's definitely the fastest and most explosive in the Premiership, but he's not an enormous guy and not a big ball carrier. So this will be a real good test.
6'2 and 16 stone?
He is, yeah. I can tell you exactly, he's 6 foot on the nose.
Jeez.
And just over 100 kg.
So 16,
that's small.
16 stone and six foot.
So compared to Billy Vunipola, he's 30, near enough 30 kilos lighter than Billy Vunipola.
So they could play him, but they need... Sounds like they need Nathan Hughes to play alongside him, basically.
You'd need like Don Armand and another monstrous.
James Haskell would probably be the guy.
You could have Haskell, you could, because of his
work
rate.
That's what he does.
Or you'd even have Don Armand at seven and someone like Itoje at six.
Yeah,
or Laws at six.
Those two are monsters in the back row. I mean, Laws was, you know, like you mentioned.
Laws before, and Itoje, yeah.
Was quality. They're so looking... how you actually unpick this lot? I don't know. Does it go Launchbury? And do you go? Does Itoje miss out, or does he go second row?
Itoje doesn't miss out.
No.
Itoje and Cruz play.
Cruz definitely plays.
Laws plays then.
He's
Laws or
I think Itoji's like is he fourth or fifth in line to the throne? What is he? He's been given special.
I think
ties.
If anything happens to Donald Trump, he's straight in there.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's right.
But I don't know what his parliamentary status is.
Leader of the free world, Xi Jinping is more likely leader of the free world right now. So
yeah.
Maybe he becomes Chinese premier.
And Maro Itoje's humble enough to be leader of the free world.
Yep.
On humble watch.
Yeah, I was filmed being humble this week.
Oh,
yeah,
so humble.
I was so humble. I was brushing the change rooms, just being humble.
Yeah. Well, you were mopping actually, not brushing.
Oh, I'd already brushed.
See, exactly. That's what I was going to say.
I don't condone the
behaviour. That's the bit people didn't see you brushing. And I could see how embarrassed you were that they caught you mopping.
I know. Yeah. I don't like it to be about me. But occasionally it is.
But you've got a little clip of Donald Trump being humble.
No, I don't. Sorry, I didn't.
Oh, you didn't get it? Oh, okay. Oh, well.
Maybe
that's for another day.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay.
Right, sorry. I just want you to finish off. So, is Law 6?
Yeah.
Law 6?
But then that means...
For me.
Launchbury misses out.
For me, yeah.
You're probably right.
Harsh, but you know, I think you're probably right. And that is exactly why Eddie Jones is the best paid coach in the world, or one of. Because he's got to figure this lot out.
Yeah. How do you get four second rows into only two spots?
How would Stuart Lancaster...
How do you
Stuart
get
Lancaster
four incredible locks into...
Six?
Well,
sorry?
Yeah. So
Itoje
has been playing brilliantly at six. Stuart Lancaster would start him at 12.
That makes sense. You could get them all in then.
Yeah. 2J12, Law 6, Lodbury and Cruz in the centres.
Oh, that Rob Andrew doesn't know what he's talking about.
Yeah, hold the autobiography, Rob. We've got it covered. Stu knew what was going on.
Sounds like you're going to have to pulp those books.
Right, back to that game. Montpellier, Exeter.
Montpellier, narrowly.
Are we all saying Montpellier?
Yeah.
Yes, I am.
Montpellier by 3 points, Exeter to get two losing bonus points out of this.
Ooh, interesting.
Then, pool one, La Rochelle host Ulster. Now, I'm actually in Northern Ireland this coming weekend.
Doing what?
At a wedding. Ugh. Unfortunately, Ulster are playing in France. So, I can't watch this game.
You can meet up with the Ulster mates, can't you?
I could do. Me and JB are in Belfast later this year, actually.
12th of December.
No, 15th of December.
15th of December, the Harlequins game.
To watch the Harlequins game.
Fab.
And we might even be up in Glasgow, 30th of December, but wait and see on that one.
So, La Rochelle hosting Ulster. Predictions?
Is this the game of the week?
Not yet.
Okay. Ulster hosting...
La Rochelle hosting Ulster.
I think La Rochelle...
La Rochelle narrowly.
Yeah.
I think La Rochelle... I think we'll struggle to get anything out of this game. La Rochelle have proven they're very good at home. And against Quinns have proven they're very good on the road. They're a good all-round team. So if we get a bonus point, I'll be delighted.
Yeah.
Then the other pool one game, half five on Sunday is Wasps hosting Quinns. Which, Quinns have already beaten Wasps at home. Wasps are now on a 5-game losing streak.
The Smith Bowl 2, they're calling it, JB.
Smith Bowl?
The Marcus Smith Bowl 2. Because that was the one where he announced himself.
Was it?
Yeah.
I think Quinns will win this. I mean, the way they played the last 15 minutes against La Rochelle, they were irresistible. So
as long as they're good for
yeah,
good 15 minutes, that'll do it. Yeah, that'll roll
soft,
Wasps over.
I mean, like against Sale, they were very, very good.
Wasps have got more injuries. Tom Cruise dislocated his thumb,
has
so it's
he?
Another hooker Ooh. Out. And there was, excuse me, Thomas Young had a little ankle or it was a hamstring maybe, or groin
need,
actually, it was groin.
They need Thomas Young.
And they need him, because he was one player who actually showed the kind of form that he's seen in the
so
past.
Tough. Is Sam Jones fit yet?
No, he's a way off, I think.
Crikey, that was Reader.
You're trying to mind me for fantasy rugby draft information.
Yeah, what else do you know, Tim?
Yeah, Sam Jones is back in a couple of weeks. Yeah, he is. No, he's not.
So he's basically been out a year now since England camp.
Yeah.
God, that's awful. Right. Wasps are going to lose. And I think that's...
Give me Quinns.
Give me Quinns.
In the most Quinnsy way to lose at home than win away.
Oh, come on, actually. It's Quinns, isn't it? They're going to lose. They have to lose. This is going to be two sides trying their hardest to both lose the game.
Quinns now have to.
Who will it be?
If Quinns lose it, then that game in Belfast is just going to be a procession for Ulster.
Oh, that'd be brilliant.
Excellent. Yeah,
because Quinns have to win this now they've lost at home.
But Wasps have to win.
Yeah, both teams. Whichever team loses is done.
It's almost a knockout game.
Although I say that, and Exeter lost their first three games last year.
Year before.
The year before. Was this when they...
Oh, no, they lost the first three last year and didn't go through. When they did go through, they lost the first two, I think.
Yeah.
Did they?
Yeah.
Anyway.
So we're all saying we don't really know on this one. It could be anything.
If Wasps have a reasonable team out, I'd pick Wasps at home.
Yeah.
They don't, do they? That's the thing.
Well, the team was better against Ulster than it was the previous week.
Yeah. But have you ever seen Elliot Daly so quiet?
Yeah.
The last few weeks, to be fair.
Yeah.
Just I honestly think it's time for them to look at Miller at 10, Gopperforth at 12.
All the other way around. You know what? I think you might be right.
Well, that's what they had to do for most of the game.
Yeah.
Because Macken went off with an HIA.
And he's just a big runner, Macken. He's a nice player. They've either got to do that or kind of reinvent their entirely how they play. And it's a real problem. I actually feel for him. It's a real problem that they've got. Too much talent.
They're getting a lot of sympathy for the injuries, but actually Bath have got more injuries, but it's just as we identified earlier. I actually think I think as we identified, if you trade Kirtley Beale and Billy LaRue, I think Wasps win probably a couple more games.
100%.
Maybe more than two more games than everyone.
I'm with you.
They've lost five. They might have won three
even
of those.
Even someone like Lovu Bilavu.
Yeah.
I mean, he can come in and make a difference, do something a bit, you know, a bit unusual.
He might be back. We'll see. Anyway.
Ooh, fingers crossed.
That's quite an interesting game.
Yep.
Then
neither side's going to win the tournament, probably.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
The way it's going.
Well, so. If we knew, we wouldn't play the games.
Yep.
Final game.
Yeah, come on then.
Get the music ready, Jay.
Right, we are sponsored by Leo Vegas, who could help you win.
Oh, hang on. Let's make sure we get this exactly right.
All the timing's perfect.
It's time for our Leo Vegas Bet of the Week. They're our sponsors and could help you get... There you go. The game of the week, which we are recommending. If you want to have a flutter, then there's different ways to bet, all kinds of different ways with leovegas.com. They've got a top app as well. It is, Phil, the game.
It is 1 p.m. Ooh. Saturday, 21st of October, 2017, in Scotstoun, Glasgow, hosting Leinster.
Tasty.
Now, pool three is the best pool in the tournament.
Yeah.
Because this is bringing us on the Sunday at 1 o'clock, Montpellier, Exeter, which we've already deliberated on, and Glasgow versus Leinster is a hell of a game.
I don't think it's ever happened, but I potentially wonder whether pool three could be the first time four teams win three games.
Yeah.
Four teams win three games.
But not necessarily all just winning their home games.
Mm. Yeah.
Because I think all the teams are capable of winning away, which means that anyone can lose a home game, but anyone can win an away game.
Glasgow again. It's probably in this pool. It's over if they lose.
It is, and they'll know it. And
I think they're going to win.
So I think they're going to win. Their first loss of the season was at Exeter, and two things that are big factors. One, Exeter last year, champions of England. They're a hell of a team, on a good run of form, playing at home. And Glasgow had done a hell of a journey. So we're in... They will always say that's not going to affect them. It cannot not affect them.
They're in Bloemfontein.
Yeah. For what was incredibly physical 29-26 game against one of the other best teams, and certainly one of the best teams at home in the Pro 14, the Cheetahs.
And they beat them.
And then had to travel all the way back to the UK.
And then travel to the other end of the UK.
Yeah. So Glasgow, they'll have a week of recovery and preparation in readiness for this. That team has faced Leinster a whole host of times, and both teams will understand the strengths and weaknesses of each other. And I think at home, Glasgow are going to win.
Fraser Brun. I mean, he went down. Ooh. Excuse me.
Oh, by the way, the North injury looked awful. Awful today.
Yeah,
because he got up. Nothing worse than seeing him go down again. I think that's a serious one.
That could be cruise ships or something.
Did you see it's him?
No, I didn't.
So he goes down, and the medical staff come on, and you think, "Oh, this is bad. He's on the floor." Medical staff come on, he gets up onto his feet. The ball is
so they reset for like a scrum, and he's got to run from his position to an attacking scrum for Northampton to where he needs to be. And then play stops and he's like on the floor 30 yards back.
Yeah, completely untouched.
No one around it. It's reminiscent. So they didn't really replay what happened to leaving.
When you say on the floor, you just mean he couldn't run, so he went down.
He's on the floor, writhing in pain.
Yeah. So reminiscent of the two injuries. One, Michael Owen in, I think it was the 2006 Euros, where his cruciates went.
That was bad.
And do you remember Quade Cooper, where he stepped, no one tackled him in his cruciates? Two untouched times where players' cruciates have gone.
Yeah, but both those times, they were doing something very athletic. He was just running an arc.
Fraser Brown...
Starting to sprint.
Fraser Brown got a knock at a line out to his knee, and then Exeter scored. And then so he went back into position, and as he followed the kick, he pushed off with his left leg and just stopped and went down and just stopped.
Yep, that's a bad one.
So it could be a bad one as well.
Yeah.
Well, get well soon to those two players. This game is, I'm going for Glasgow.
Me too.
Glasgow as well. I think 5 points.
Glasgow to really ignite their European Challenge
Cup. Ignite the Pool.
European Champions Cup, even.
So if it goes as we're calling, all of those teams will have won a game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, tasty.
I'm just looking through the...
If Exeter or Leinster win, they have just grabbed a hold of that pool.
Yeah, if either of them double up and win away, follow a home win with an away win.
Yeah.
But yeah, that is going to be such a difficult pool to get out of.
I can't believe Nico Matawala is actually a serviceable rugby player again. Amazing, isn't it?
Have we mentioned Ospreys in the...
Yeah,
games.
Yeah, we did.
Okay.
Thankfully, it was short. Okay, good. So, 5 points, 5 points, 5 points then.
Yeah.
Right. Join our Facebook group, please, if you're interested in our tour. If you are a good rugby player, get in contact potentially about egg chasing.
Leone, what's happening that weekend? Leone Nakarawa, it'll be Six Nations.
Yeah, Marnonu. Oh, no, Marnonu, because he'll be playing 12G.
We don't need you, Ma.
Yeah, the only people nailed on to play are me and Phil. Unless you want a game too.
Yeah, I'll have a game.
Yeah. So, and we'll surround ourselves with just world-beating talent.
Yeah.
Yeah. So who would we be
the rugby equivalent of then? Who has been mediocre surrounded by incredible talent?
I am the amateur rugby equivalent of Louis Pickermore playing 12. If Louis Pickermore was an amateur, that is my style.
Louis Pickermore's got wonderful hands.
Oh, hang on. No, okay. Louis Pickermore with PS Beast's hands playing 12. that's how I'd go.
Right. So get online to our Facebook page, check in on the tour. If you haven't seen the Facebook video and you want to see Phil's vest, describe that, JB.
Nice. Nice. Orange.
Bright orange.
Are you wearing one of your own t-shirts this week or Brim Williams's? You were wearing one of his Calvin Klein pyjama tops last week.
Oh, yeah.
No, this actually belongs to me. I bought this with my own money.
Wow. If you just want to see the rugby dungeon or whatever, if get online, leave us a review and just share and tweet. In fact, do we have an Egg Chasers tie to give away?
We can do. We'll do a stash tag and something. So we'll post up this episode of the podcast if you retweet it with the stash tag. Yeah, there you go.
Should we actually have a stash tag?
Yeah, should we just put stash tag? What are we going to do?
Should we think of something like...
Quotes tweets the podcast.
No, not quote. Oh, no, just sod it. Just retweet it.
Yeah, retweet it and we'll work it out. And we'll send you a tie or a t-shirt.
Just share
whatever you want.
It helps and we appreciate it. And it means we can get massive bunches of lads lads together in Madrid in March and do cool things like that.
Exactly. Right, let's go.
Let the boys play.
The boys play.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.